Celebrating the disappearance day of Shivas Thakur. And as I think everybody knows, Shivas Thakur is a member of the Panchatattva, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadata, Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinda, and the Panchatattva, the five tattva means truth or existence or existential. So the five are Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Advaita Acharya, Gadadhar and Shivas, and three of them are Vishnu Tattva. That means they're God. That is Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and Advaita Acharya. Lord Chaitanya, of course, is Krishna in the mood of Radharani. Lord Nityananda is Balaram, Balaram Hoila Natai, and Advaita Acharya is an incarnation of Mahavishnu, sometimes described as Sadashiva. Gadadhar is an incarnation of Srimati Radharani. And Shivas is an incarnation of Narada Muni. And Narada Muni represents in the Panchatattva the Jiva Tattva, or the Jiva soul. Jiva soul means individual soul, just like any of us. So, of course, we cannot become Narada Muni, but we can get the same position as Narada Muni if we desire, which means to continually travel and give people Krishna consciousness. So, that is Shivas Thakur. So we can talk a little bit about his history and interactions and pastimes with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Shivas Thakur, he appeared in a place called Srihatta, and he had two other brothers, Shiram, who was Parvata Muni. Parvata is the eternal companion of Narada Muni, just like you hear the stories of when Narada Muni approaches Magrari the hunter. I think you all know that story. After Narada Muni had given Magrari the hunter a warning about his future reactions, karma, because he was half killing the animals, then Magrari decided to become a devotee, decided to chant, decided to surrender everything and worship the Tulsi Devi plant. And so the next time Narada Muni went to visit him, he was bringing Parvata Muni with him. And Narada Muni was observing, along with Parvata Muni, how Magrari, instead of killing animals at that time, was actually jumping over the ants to avoid hurting them. And Parvata Muni remarked that this is the attestation to your great mercy, Narada Muni, that you're able to change someone who is at the lowest platform. Lowest platform means someone who is torturing animals, killing animals, torturing animals, eating animals, and change them into saints. Because here was someone who previously was torturing animals, and now we wouldn't even hurt an ant. So we find that also in Srila Prabhupada's pastimes, that Srila Prabhupada took people who are basically malechas, and he turned them into saints, as long as they followed the process of Krishna consciousness. Actually, one time, there was a kirtan going on, and Prabhupada explained to the devotees that Narada Muni was there at the kirtan. And the devotees asked Prabhupada, what was Narada Muni doing? And Prabhupada explained that Narada Muni was laughing to see all the malechas chanting and dancing. Laughing out of ecstasy, not laughing at us. You know, sometimes you can laugh at someone, that's very cruel, but you can laugh just out of pleasure and happiness and amazement at seeing the great mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and of his intimate servant, Srila Prabhupada. So, anyway, so Narada Muni's other brother was named Sripati. And Narada Muni, incidentally, when he appeared as Shivas Thakur, was married, which is quite interesting, because Narada Muni is renowned as a Naishtiki Brahmachari. Naishtiki means unbroken. That someone is just committed to being a Brahmachari his whole life without getting married. And in fact, there's that story in the Bhagavatam where Narada Muni is approached by Jara, or old age, who is a lady at that particular point, and he refuses to accept her, and it's explained that because Narada Muni refuses to accept jara, or old age. Therefore, he never gets old. He always remains young. And also, we see this with the four kumaras. So, anyway, so the point is, Narada Muni, in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, as Srivast Thakur, did get married. And his wife's name was Malini. And in Krishna Leela, she was Ambika, who was actually Krishna's nurse. So in other words, Malini, or Srivast Thakur's wife, had the parental humor or affection for Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, because in Krishna Leela, she was Krishna's nurse, his Ambika. Srivast Thakur's niece, who was Ambika's sister, was named Narayani. And does anyone know who Narayani's son was? Anybody know? No, not Vishwanath Chakravarti. Vrindavan Das Thakur, who is the author of, nobody knows, Chaitanya Bhagwat, which is the authorized biography of the early years or early pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you see this connection between all the two people, all the people. And also, Narayani was in Krishna Leela, Ambika's sister too. Ambika, who is Krishna's nurse, we mentioned before. And so, Malini and Srivast Thakur were friends with Jagannath Mishra. Actually, they were about the same age as Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Mata, which means they were far older, at least 20 to 30 years older than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So therefore, they cared for her, they cared for Sachi Devi when she was pregnant. That is, Srivast Thakur, his wife Malini, and Narayani cared for Srivast Thakur's wife Malini when she was pregnant. Lord Chaitanya's mother, Sachi Devi, when she was pregnant, and they cared for her just like a nurse. But as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu grew up, he first did not exhibit the qualities of a devotee. First, he's exhibiting the qualities of someone who is very attached to logic, rhetoric, argumentation, and Lord Chaitanya would challenge the devotees. And the devotees, in many cases, they would avoid Lord Chaitanya. They would walk in the opposite direction. And Srivast Thakur, because he was far older than Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would chastise Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he had a special name for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, "You are the crest jewel of the arrogant." That's an interesting statement. It's a very poetic statement saying you're puffed up. Oh, there's your phone. So crest jewel means like, crest means like there's the crown and then you put a jewel. So you're the most arrogant person I've ever met in my life, Srivast Thakur was saying to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he said to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Do you know the purpose of life? You are wasting your human form of life, just arguing with people and being proud." And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu turned to Srivast Thakur, because he was known as Nimai Pandit at that time. Lord Chaitanya was known as Nimai Pandit. And he said to him, "By your mercy, I'll become a devotee. And by your mercy, I will become such a great devotee that even Lord Brahma and the demigods will come down and worship me." So, in other words, first Srivast Thakur was thinking that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was proud, and now he thought he was even more proud. Could you imagine if someone joins the Hare Krishna movement, you preach to him for some time, he decides to join the movement, and then he says, "I'm going to be such a great devotee that all the demigods are going to worship me." You probably put him to washing the pots. And say, "You got to become very, very humble." So Srivast Thakur was pretty upset with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took initiation from Ishwara Puri, showing the importance of taking initiation from a bona fide guru. Because before taking initiation, he wasn't manifesting, at least externally, his devotional qualities and characteristics. But when he took initiation from Ishwara Puri, he immediately began to show his devotional characteristics, and then he also exhibited himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what happened is he came to Srivast Thakur's house, and he sat on Srivast Thakur's altar. Can you imagine someone doing that? Not only was Srivast Thakur upset that he said he was going to become a great devotee of the Lord, but there, Lord Chaitanya sat on his altar. It's like someone coming into the temple room, a new devotee, and sitting on the altar with Sri Sri Radha Radha Kanta. It'd be quite upsetting, isn't it? So he sat on the altar, but he showed he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead by manifesting four arms. And then Srivast Thakur actually understood who he was. He offered dandavats at Lord Chaitanya's feet, and Lord Chaitanya revealed, "I am he who you've been worshipping all these years." And Srivast Thakur was overwhelmed with ecstasy. Now, of course, we mentioned before that Narayani was in the house of Srivast Thakur. There's a very interesting story about her. When she was very, very young, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to her, "Chant Hare Krishna." And she began to chant Hare Krishna so enthusiastically, like when she was 4 years old, she rolled on the ground in ecstasy. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would give her his prashanam remnants. And people say, because of taking Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, she was able to give birth later on to Vrindavan Das Thakur. Another story about Srivast Thakur's house, in which the nocturnal kirtans were being held. Nocturnal means every night they would hold kirtans. Sometimes these kirtans would go on for 48 hours, sometimes 72 hours. There was one of the associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu named Vrikeshara Pandit, who could dance for 72 hours straight without stopping. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Vrikeshara Pandit that if I had two devotees like you, because you're like my wing, if I had two devotees, it would be like having two wings. And if I had two wings, I could fly in the sky. So these were some of the unusual things that happened at the house of Srivast Thakur. Even Srivast Thakur's servants became blessed by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presence. There was a servant who was named Duki, which means unhappy. And that servant, that maidservant, later got the name by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Suki, which means very, very happy. And then other things happened. Many things happened at Srivast Thakur's house, or Srivast Sangam, which is right near where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. If you go to Mayapur Dham, you'll see there's a Dvaita Bhavan, Srivast Sangam, and the Yoga Peeth. A Dvaita Bhavan is Lord Dvaita's house, where he lived when he was in Navadvip area. He also had a house in Shantipur. And Srivast Thakur's house is there. And in the temple at Srivast Thakur's house, you'll see a broken murdanga, which is really interesting. So people ask, why is the murdanga broken in Srivast Thakur's house? It's on the altar. It's because that's where the murdanga was broken by the Qazi's assistants when the Qazi tried to prohibit Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from having his kirtans. So, other things that happened during the kirtans, once upon a time, during the kirtan, Srivast Thakur's son passed away. And Srivast Thakur saw that his wife was crying, which was quite a natural phenomena. And he went to his wife, he said, "Why are you crying?" And she said, "Your son has died." And he said, "I do not want you to disturb Lord Chaitanya's kirtan. If you actually disturb his kirtan with your crying, I'll give you something more to cry about." He was pretty heavy with his wife. Not to say that everybody should be like that, but he said to her, "I'll give you something very heavy to cry about." So everybody kept the tears within their eyes during the kirtan. And when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finished his kirtan, he looked around and he said, "Something unfortunate has happened in this house. What has happened?" And Srivast Thakur said, "Just a small little thing. A jiva soul has passed away in the middle of your kirtan." And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Why didn't you tell me this? Why didn't you interrupt the kirtan? And Srivas Thakur said, I didn't want to interrupt the flow of your ecstasy. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, all right, let me see the sun. So he went into the room where the dead son was lying, or the body of the dead son. And he said, why have you left, Srivas Thakur? And he touched the body, and the son got up. And the son started preaching, you know, so many mothers and fathers have I had before, and now I have left my body during your cure time. So let me go back to Godhead. And so the son passed away again and went back to the spiritual world. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu looked at Srivas Thakur and said, because you were so devoted to me, you did not want to stop my kirtan. Therefore, from this day forward, myself and Lord Nityananda will be your sons. Very nice, isn't it? So, some very interesting, actually even radical or controversial things happened. That Lord Nityananda would continually go over Srivas Thakur's house to take prasadam, but the way he would take prasadam is he would sit on Srivas Thakur's wife's lap, Malini's lap. You remember, Lord Nityananda was older than anybody. He was the older brother of Lord Chaitanya. And previously he had been in Vrindavan waiting for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to manifest his pastimes. So here was a grown man and quite tall. He was like 7 or 8 feet tall. And he was sitting on this lady's lap and she would feed him like a baby. And not only that, she would breastfeed him. This is something you don't want to imitate. It says that Lord Nityananda is the avadut. The word avadut means like the wind. Someone who really doesn't follow any particular procedures, rules, regulations. Even when Lord Nityananda was acting as a renunciate, he would wear jewelry. And of course the reason he wore jewelry is because he wanted to attract the thieves. And the reason he wanted to attract the thieves is he wanted to give the thieves his mercy. There's a whole other story, the Chaitanya Bhagavat, about that. How Lord Nityananda eventually gave this whole band of dacoits his mercy because they were planning on how to steal his jewelry. So Lord Nityananda was quite an unusual chap, as they say in the UK. And no one should imitate him. So anyway, so he would have this relationship with Srivas Thakur's wife like a little kid. There was nothing improper about it. He became like a little kid in relationship to Srivas Thakur's wife. And once upon a time, something very interesting happened in Srivas Thakur's house that, as we mentioned before, Srivas Thakur sometimes would get angry at his wife. So he had this vessel in which he kept ghee. And so somehow or other, a crow came down and stole that vessel, took the vessel in its beak and flew away with it. And Srivas Thakur's wife was extremely in anxiety about this because she was worried her husband was going to get angry at her. As I mentioned, he had a temper. And so she was crying, and Lord Nityananda said, my dear mother, why are you crying? She said, my husband's going to get very angry because the crow stole the ghee vessel. And then Lord Nityananda started to talk to the crow. He said, crow, bring it back. And then the crow flew back with the ghee vessel and dropped it off at the lady's feet. And that was a very interesting story illustrating the relationship of Lord Nityananda with Malini and also Srivas Thakur. Srivas Thakur also didn't work to maintain himself. This is very interesting. Of course, nowadays we understand devotees have to work to maintain themselves. When we first joined the movement, there was this whole idea, you just join the movement and you don't have to worry about anything for the rest of your life. That was giving people a false expectation. Does anyone remember that in the early days? I mean, and I have to apologize for that. You know, I also was part of that whole scene where you move people in the temple, brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, and you know, back to home, back to Godhead, and you'll never have to work, it's all maya. And then eventually, you know, when people grew up, they discovered that there's a material world out here. They were so much isolated from reality. Does anyone remember that? In the old days, that's the Hare Krishna cult. So we were isolated from reality. And even if one, a devotee wanted to work, we would say they blooped. It was so heavy in Prabhupada's days that even if a householder moved out of the temple with his wife, you know, just to have some space for his kids, we would say, oh, poor so-and-so, he blooped from the Hare Krishna movement. Because the movement's changed now. And now we have the opposite. Everybody lives outside, and there's only one poor sannyasi living in the temple. So we have to be practical in this world. You know, if you want to eat, you gotta make money. If you want a house, you gotta make money. And unfortunately, we didn't present this properly in the beginning days of the movement, and people just have to start doing economic development when they're 50 or 60 years old, which is a very unfortunate thing. So actually, according to the Varnashram system, economic development is done when one is 20 to 50. And after that is retirement. But we got things reversed in ISKCON. We had retirement first, and then economic development, which creates a real social dysfunction. So, getting back to the point, Lord Chaitanya was very worried that Srivast Thakur didn't work. He didn't have any way to make a living. He wasn't even like that Kolavecha Sridhar, who was selling parts of the banana tree, and he was quite poor, but at least he was doing something to make a living. And actually, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu impoverished him by taking his stuff away. There's a story in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. He would go to him and just take his goods without paying for them. So Lord Chaitanya was very concerned with Srivast Thakur's maintenance. So he went to Srivast Thakur and said, my dear Srivast Thakur, how do you maintain yourself? And Srivast Thakur said, I have this 1-2-3, methodology. He said, if I have to fast for 3 days, I will tie a water pot to my legs and drown myself in the Ganges. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, upon hearing that, hearing these words coming from his great devotee, his pure devotee, his eternal associate, he said, Srivast Thakur, I will personally make sure that you are maintained, even if the goddess of fortune has to go begging for prasadam, you'll have enough to eat. So Lord Chaitanya personally maintained, arranged through his spiritual potency to maintain Srivast Thakur. So he never had to work. In fact, he even had servants in his home. So he's maintaining a large family. That's what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. How are you maintaining such a large family? And so Lord Chaitanya personally took responsibility. That's how close Srivast Thakur was to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if anyone offended Srivast Thakur, Lord Chaitanya would reject that person. He would consider that person unable to understand Krishna consciousness. There's a story of Devananda Pandit. Once upon a time, Devananda Pandit, who was a great scholar in the Srimad Bhagavatam, was giving Srimad Bhagavatam class. And Srivast Thakur happened to walk into class. He heard there was class going on. He went into class. And he became so much absorbed in the Bhagavatam that he fell on the ground in ecstasy and started crying. And Devananda Pandit's disciples kicked Srivast Thakur out of the car. They just picked him up like a bouncer at a bar picks someone up and threw him out. And Devananda Pandit didn't say anything. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became so angry with Devananda Pandit that when he walked by Devananda Pandit's Bhagavatam class, he yelled out, this guy will never understand Bhagavatam in a million lifetimes. It's like someone walking by the class right now and from the window yelling out at me, this sannyasi will never understand Bhagavatam. He's useless. So Devananda Pandit was shocked to hear that, but he remained peaceful. But later on, Devananda Pandit apologized to Srivast Thakur because he got the mercy of this other devotee who I mentioned previously, Vrikeshwara Pandit, because he protected Vrikeshwara Pandit one time when Vrikeshwara Pandit was dancing in ecstasy. And there was a crowd around him, so Devananda Pandit held off the crowd to protect this great devotee, Vrikeshwara Pandit. So then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Devananda Pandit, you should apologize to Srivast Thakur, and he became free of the effects of his offenses. Another time, there was another person who offended Srivast Thakur. His name was Gopal Chapala, or sometimes called Chapal Gopal. So Gopal Chapala was very, very angry at Srivast Thakur because he wasn't allowed to come into the kirtan. And the reason he wasn't allowed to come into the kirtan at night was because the kirtan was only for pure devotees. It was actually someone at the door who made sure that everybody who came in was a pure devotee. So we don't do that in our ISKCON temple, or else there wouldn't be anybody in the temple. Except for Prabhupada. And, you know, some great souls. I'm sure there's some great souls. Like Sri Devi. But otherwise, there wouldn't be anybody in the temple room. So this personality, Chapal Gopal, was very angry. And he thought, I am going to frame Srivast Thakur. In other words, framing means you're going to put something in his house or in front of his house so it appears like he's guilty of something. Sometimes the police do that with people. They put drugs in someone's house, someone who they want to really put in jail, and then they go to the person's house and they discover the drugs and they say, oh, you're taking drugs. And the person never saw the drugs before.
Police do that?
Yeah. In India they do that. Yeah, they do that here too. It's not that common, but it happens. You know, when they really want to get someone, that's called framing someone. You know, they frame someone. Framing someone, that's an English term, which means they actually put something or arrange for the person to be guilty even though he's not guilty. And so this person, Gopal Chapal, he wanted to do that with Srivast Thakur. So he planted the ingredients for worshipping Durga outside of Srivast Thakur's house, like vermilion and all these other things. They're special flowers to offer to Durga and Shiva. And so Srivast Thakur woke up the next morning and he looked outside his house and he said, well, now everybody knows I'm worshipping Durga. In other words, he didn't take it very seriously and he called for someone to sweep it and take it all away. But because of that offense, this Gopal Chapali developed leprosy immediately. And when you develop leprosy, that means your nose falls off, your fingers, they fall off. I mean, leprosy used to be quite common in India and also in the South Pacific. Nowadays, they have a cure for it. But in those days, they used to have a leper colony. A leper colony means they would isolate them in a particular colony where the people couldn't infect each other because they were already infected with leprosy. So he got leprosy. And then he went to Lord Chaitanya after he had offended Srivast Thakur and after he had gotten leprosy and said, Lord Chaitanya, please help me. Forgive me. You are the most munificent, supreme personality of Godhead. And Lord Chaitanya said, I curse you. I don't forgive you. I curse you to be bitten by those same worms for millions of years or millions of lifetimes. And so that was a shock because Lord Chaitanya is known as someone who's very merciful, compassionate. But when you offend one of Lord Chaitanya's devotees, then Lord Chaitanya gets angry at you. Sometimes it's said there's no offense in worshiping Panchatattva, right? Or in chanting the Panchatattva Mahamantra. Well, if you really try, you can commit an offense. Believe me. It's not that you say, there's no offense, I have a special dispensation, I can break the regulative principles, I can do this, I can do that. And Lord Chaitanya is very merciful. Lord Chaitanya does get angry. He got angry at Madhai, and he also got angry at this particular person, Gopal Chapala. Eventually Gopal Chapala apologized to Srivast Thakur, and he was forgiven by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was cured. But that's another story. And then showing Srivast Thakur's great connection or deep connection with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, anyone who was associated with Srivast Thakur in a positive way got Krishna prema. Even meat eaters. Isn't that amazing? There's a story in the Chaitanya Bhagavat about a tailor. A tailor, of course, is someone who makes clothes. And he was a tailor of Srivast Thakur. He was rendering service, I guess, making clothes for free for Srivastava Thakur. Because when you do something and you get paid for it, that's not devotional service. Prabhupada said that. If you do something, let's say if I'm doing arti and I get paid $10 for every arti I do, that's not devotional service. That's, Prabhupada said the only result you get from that is the money itself. It's interesting, isn't it? But obviously when if the temple maintains someone, that's devotional service. But if you're getting salary, that's not really devotional service. I mean, if it's a salary above and beyond maintenance. Does everyone understand that? Prabhupada made that point very, very clear. Then the results are the money rather than the bhakti. So there was a tailor who was making clothes for Srivastava Thakur, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed him his form as Krishna and gave him pure devotional service. And he was a meat eater. Think about that for a second. So the point is that Mahatseva Mahurvi Muktes, if you serve a great devotee, not that you should keep eating meat, I mean, that's not the point. If you serve a great devotee, then the path of liberation becomes, or the path of pure devotional service becomes opened up very, very easily. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would sometimes test Srivastava Thakur in different ways. He wanted to test Srivastava Thakur's devotion for Lord Nityananda, because Lord Nityananda was coming over his house all the time and acting according to the way people would ordinarily understand it. They would think that Lord Nityananda was acting crazy, because he was sitting on Srivastava Thakur's wife's lap, drinking the breast milk and everything. I mean, that's pretty wild. So, Lord Chaitanya said to Srivastava Thakur, why do you let this avaduta come to your house? Nobody knows where he came from. He acts wild. And he certainly did act wild in many ways. Sometimes when a Dvaitacharya would serve Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda rice, then Lord Nityananda would throw the rice all over the place, like a little kid. And some of that rice would touch the body of a Dvaitacharya, and a Dvaitacharya would complain that you're making me crazy like you, just because the rice is touching my body. So Lord Chaitanya said to Srivastava Thakur, why do you let this avaduta come into your house? He's destroying your reputation. But then Srivastava Thakur said something very interesting. Even if I see Lord Nityananda enter into a liquor store, or even if he marries a Muslim girl, I mean, that's a heavy statement to make, then I will not be dissuaded from serving him and my conviction that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then when Lord Chaitanya heard this, he embraced Srivastava Thakur and said, what have you said? You have great faith in Lord Nityananda. You will always have the mercy of Krishna. Sometimes Srivastava Thakur did things that weren't pleasing to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One time, Srivastava Thakur's mother-in-law came in for the kirtan, and she wasn't a great devotee. She must have been some type of devotee, but she was hiding behind the curtain, behind the drapes. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not feeling any ecstasy in the kirtan. He was dancing and dancing, and said, I'm not feeling ecstasy. Someone must be here, doesn't belong here. And so they opened the curtains, and they found Srivastava Thakur's mother-in-law, and Srivastava Thakur just chucked her out the door in a second to please, that's a mother-in-law story, to please Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya felt ecstasy. But another time, Srivastava Thakur personally invited someone to come in who wasn't really worthy at that particular time. He saw a Brahmin who was living only by drinking milk. He thought, this is very pious. You just drink milk. He wasn't eating any vegetables, no sweets, nothing else but milk. And he thought, this person is qualified to get Lord Chaitanya's association. So he brought the Brahmin in, and Lord Chaitanya exhibited the same sort of pastime that he did with Srivastava Thakur's mother-in-law. He said, I'm not feeling any ecstasy. And Srivastava Thakur said, but there's this pure Brahmin here. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you think you can become purified just by drinking milk? I mean, milk is pure, but if you just drink it, You also have to chant Hare Krishna, you have to do sadhana bhakti and other things like that. It's not that you just drink milk, you gotta do other things. So, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said he should leave. But the Brahmin, he took this very, very nicely and became very humble. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, all right, because he's humble and he's taking this in the right way, then he can stay. So that's another story that illustrates that our humility will win us the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This point is also made in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami, where the price, one of the prices of pure devotional service is humility. So these are some of the stories that occurred in the house of Srivas Thakur. And Srivas Thakur would always associate with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would go to Jagannath Puri during the Chaturmasya period to associate with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and participate in the Rathyatra ceremony and the other ceremonies that were surrounding the worship of Lord Jagannath. So that's all I have to say. So any questions or comments? Yes.
When Mother Rajalila was here, she was explaining and she put a lot of emphasis on what you just say, that we kind of did things backwards. We enjoyed the retirement and now we have the need to work.
Yeah.
And it's now this need, this urgency in ISKCON to address that issue, because more and more we see, like, especially the generation of Prabhupada disciples, getting close for that moment. And so many times, like, we see in Dandavas, they're appealing for help because such and such devotees have given his or her life to ISKCON, and they don't have medical insurance, they don't have money, they don't have nothing. And the devotees need, the medical care and the things. So, unfortunately, we have lived in this kind of dysfunctional,
yes,
Economical, yes, Situation that we didn't realize
one day
we are going to need what maybe before looked like so materialistic, money and medical insurance. It's really a need.
Yeah, so ISKCON and the devotees, the community, should take responsibility. Just like, for example, one of our devotees, Lochan, his daughter, some of you may be aware of this, like about 2 years ago, his daughter, Vasapriya, was passing away. And Lochan, who's done everything, he's made the deities. The deities you see at Prabhupada were made by Lochan Prabhu. And so he's basically didn't have the money to take care of his daughter. He couldn't work because he was taking care of his daughter full time. So actually I did a fundraising for his daughter you probably remember that.
Yeah.
And we collected something like $12,000. And that really got him through that period. So devotees have to pull together to somehow or other help each other. And also, when, remember Pundarik, he was in the care home here. And what happened is that I made the arrangements. They said, well, they won't accept him in Vrindavan. So I was the one who contacted Giriraj Maharaj and made the arrangements for him to be accepted in the hospice in Vrindavan. And so then, fortunately, he went to Vrindavan and had the association of devotees heard the holy names when he left this material world. So that has to be an endeavor by all of us. Whether we're, let's say, authorities in ISKCON, have responsibilities in ISKCON, or we're just individual devotees, we should take some responsibility for the other devotees because of the social dysfunction. That's one thing. That's called locking the barn door after the cow has left. So to prevent that in the future, and I'm going to say something a little radical, we shouldn't encourage people to be brahmacharis and brahmacharinis in the temple. We should encourage people to engage at the proper stage of life. Unless someone is just like so absolutely renounced, then we just have explain to them, this is what's going to happen to you. When you're 30, 30, 40, you're going to figure out you need to get married. You're not going to have any way to make a living. I think we should be honest with people, not try for the short term to extract labor from people, free labor from people, but to consider people's long-term welfare. And if we do that, actually the movement will have more resources. So the idea is the leaders in ISKCON, or those who are preaching or whatever, should counsel people, advise people according to what's best for their spiritual and material welfare, rather than what's best to just to keep the temple running. So that's preventative for the future. So there's two things. We prevent the same thing from happening in the future, and then we deal with the present situation by putting resources, helping however we can. For example, in North Carolina, we have some devotees. We've taken care of several devotees who have left their bodies and who have gotten old. I have one of my disciples living in my old cabin in the woods, and she has cancer, terminal cancer. Of course, she was never a bhakti or a bhakti in the temple, but still we're taking care of her. There's an old cabin in the woods, and she's being taken care of, and the devotees will. And there's another one of my disciples who has had stroke or something like that, and another devotee is staying with her in the apartment, taking care of her. So we're trying our best within our means to take care of these devotees.
And that is probably what is so encouraging, to see the new generation understanding that point. I know for a while my own experience was when I joined the moving. I was told completely, like you say, completely stuck what was considered Maya. I was 2 semesters away from God, my bachelor's degree as a teacher. Mm. And I was told, no, forget that. It's Maya. You won't ever need that. Krishna will provide. You will be living forever in the temple with everything supplied and da-da-da. But now, the new generation are seeing a different picture.
Yeah.
And I personally find very good. I am proud that this new generation are getting education, are getting degrees, and some of them are being successful and giving back to ISKCON.
Yeah.
Like, as doctors, as dentists, as lawyers, as counselors, because I'm pretty sure that is what Prabhupada really wanted.
I agree. We should encourage all of our next generation to get education, to have some occupation, and not think just short-term benefit for the movement, but think long-term benefit for the people. And, we learn from our mistakes. Of course, in the same way, you can look at it from a different perspective. The movement would have never been able to start unless we had done that in the beginning. So there was an emergency situation. It was, in one sense, even Prabhupada encouraged that, because it was an emergency, that we wouldn't have a Hare Krishna movement right now unless people actually sacrificed their lives in doing that. There wouldn't be a movement. In the beginning, we didn't have the foundation. Now we have the foundation, so we could be more socially functional than we were in the beginning. So, there's different angles of vision to look at it. But we do have to take responsibility for our older devotees. Yeah.
I was just listening to teachings of Pinkuti. One of the purports, Srila Prabhupada states how in Los Angeles Temple, some neighbors are envious because they see us not working and having 4 cars and having nice food, but they don't want to join because they're envious. They don't want to take advantage of what we are doing.
Yeah.
So it's right there in the teachings of King Kuku that, we should all join the temple.
Well, Prabhupada didn't say we should all join the temple. He was commenting on the neighbors being envious. And secondly, that was probably the only strategy that we could have in the beginning days of the movement. Prabhupada did say that there was 50% of his mission that wasn't accomplished, which is Varnashram. So Varnashram means basically economic development. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. There's some form of economic development, like a Brahman, Yajan, Patan, Dana Pratigartha, charity, accepting charity, doing sacrifices, a Kshatriya, taking taxes, a Vaishya, commerce, cow protection. So my indication is that, yes, in the beginning days of the movement, Prabhupada encouraged that because that was the only way you could kickstart the movement. Our movement would not have started as far as I see, any other way. If you look at the beginning of any religious society, it starts with a bunch of people sacrificing their welfare to start the society. But if you look at the long term, any society that continues to exist, it has to be transformed into a more normal type of environment. So I'm not saying what we did, you know, I'm apologizing for what I did because, you know, I feel I was a little heavy in the beginning days. But I'm not saying it was wrong strategically, because the movement got started and now we're a vibrant movement. I mean, the movement's quite large, especially in India. Like Prabhupada took people from America, who he called his dancing white elephants, to go and preach in India. And now we have so much in India, it's incredible. The Prabhupada's strategy worked long term. So it's, you know, Prabhupada had it planned out, in other words. But now we have to transform ourselves into a different type of society. I don't want to encourage people to remain in the temple when they're young. I want to encourage them to get education. I want them to see to their welfare, because the movement's strong. I mean, it's not going away. Does that make sense?
Right. I believe the teachings of King Kutu were compiled from lectures.
Yeah, they were lectures.
So Srila Prabhupada would say that in a lecture and that they put it down in a book. So it appears that this is our stand. That's how we look at the people outside of the temple. They're all enemies. You know?
If someone criticizes us, I mean, for example, someone may criticize me because I'm a sannyasi, and even my mother criticizes me. My mother says, she says, why don't you go back to the university? You know, I'm 65 years old. And she says, why don't you go to the university and become a doctor? And I said, you know how many years I'd be dead before I became a doctor? I'd have to specialize in geriatrics. You know what geriatrics is? Taking care of old people. I'd have to open up a hospice. So even my mother says to me, get a real job. You know, I've been doing this for, I'm a sannyasi 36 years, and I've been serving Krishna since 1971. My mother says, get a real job. And it would probably be easier to have a regular job. I mean, having to deal with all these things that I have to deal with, I think it would be a hell of a lot easier to go to work at 8 o'clock in the morning, come back at 5, and then turn off my mobile phone and turn off my computer and not have to worry about thousands of people around the world who are creating problems. You know, I think it would be great to live here and just have a little cabin somewhere and just come out once a year. My psychology, I'm very much into being alone. And so, I mean, I've really done something that really goes against my nature for Prabhupada. You know, before I joined the movement, I was shy. Now I'm not shy anymore, unfortunately. Now I'm just offensive. So I could say, I can't say my mother's envious. She's just concerned about my welfare. And she asked me, who's going to take care of me when I'm old? And I say, you are, Mom. And she says, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I'm going to, she's 86 years old. How am I going to take care of you? And I said, that's all right. You just leave me your money. We joke. I mean, we joke around like that. But the point is, it's a sacrifice. It's a sacrifice. And I feel I've made a sacrifice I'm happy I made the sacrifice for Krishna. I'm happy with my life. I love my life. But it's a little bit different than my natural propensity would be, just to be isolated and be on that in a cabin in the woods on the top of a mountain or something like that, chanting Hare Krishna. That's my nature. So I've sacrificed that, and I'm happy I did. Yeah.
I just wanted to point out that Srila Prabhupada didn't tell everybody to do that. There were some devotees, I think. Satswarup Maharaj Jayananda, for some time, he encouraged them to continue what they were doing, to bring money to the temple, continue to hold on the job and bring money to the temple. So it wasn't like everybody was encouraged to just throw away everything and join the temple.
Yeah, but they were encouraged to have a job to give all their money to the temple. I remember even Tamal Krishnamurti, he had a job in San Francisco taking film out of the canisters at the Kodak plant. I mean, you can read about this in his biography. And Jayananda, he would work as a taxi driver and give the money to the temple. And Jayananda even turned over the money that was meant for his treatment right before he passed away to the temple. So, I mean, that was good. That was their devotion. There was their devotion. But, I mean, I'm not saying it was all Srila Prabhupada's plan, but a lot of us were pretty fanatic in the beginning days. And so we preached in a very fanatic fashion to people who joined, you know, just like give up your education, like you... Like Tomalata was just saying about, just finishing your, instead of finishing your education, one or two semesters left, just give it up and join the movement. You know, Krishna will take care of you. Nityo nityanam, chaitanya chaitanam. Of course, in one sense, Krishna has taken care of us, but it's been a struggle. And the movement, would be better off, financially and otherwise, if the devotees actually had regular, went into economic development. I mean, for example, if people continue in the university, we'd have tons of Western doctors now in our movement. And doctors make a lot of money. You know, each time they take your heart out, they make $80,000. That's why they take so many hearts out. I mean, I'm half joking about that, but doctors do unnecessary operations just to make money. They see you as a candidate for their money-making machine. So, yes, Sridevi, you have a question.
I just wanted to get some clarification, Maharaj. It's also very difficult if one has a regular 8-to-5 kind of a job to have a balance in terms of your sadhana, your health, your family life. I mean, especially for ladies, to be working like that in the outside world and getting exploited, isn't it better that we work, say, part-time or in a situation that allows us to have good health as well as have time for our sadhana and things like that, rather than ladies, having to work all the time just to maintain ourselves?
I mean, of course, ultimately the best possible, theoretical scenario is that the husband makes money and the ladies stay home and take care of the bhakti and the children and everything like that. Yeah. I mean, we're not always in the best possible scenario. But what you're saying is absolutely true. I mean, according to Varnashram, in the ideal situation, we're not in the ideal situation right now. I mean, I have to do a lot of things that are not ideal. I have to worry about, collecting money to build temples, which is not what a sannyasi is supposed to be doing at all. I have to worry about, paying mortgages, which is not what a sannyasi is supposed to be doing. I mean, we're not in the ideal situation according to varnas and ashrams right now. So ultimately, we should come to the point like Prabhupada wanted varnashram. Varnashram means basically the women are protected and they stay at home and not just stay at home, they do deity worship, they do all sorts of things, take responsibility. And the men are making the money, but that requires the men to be educated so that they have some responsible position in society. I mean, if someone is a doctor, certainly they can maintain a family. However, in modern society, of course, economic problems are so bad that many times it requires both people working just to maintain a family. So, like I said, we're in a less than ideal situation. In the future, hopefully we could move to an ideal. I mean, just like we're here in New Taliban, the ideal situation would be that people were using the oxen to plow the fields. But I'm not going to get in anyone's case because they're not using the oxen because, Jayanti's already doing enough with the cows and I say, all right, you've got to train up 20 oxen now. It's just not going to work. We don't have the infrastructure to do that right now. So we have to do the needful, which is not the ideal, but, what can we do? It's better to do something than nothing. So, you're right. But let's hope the future will have something better for us if we plan, strategically plan to go there. I mean, ultimately here in New Taliban, we should plan to have what Prabhupada wanted, simple living, high thinking. You know, there should be devotees growing vegetables so we don't have to go to the supermarket to buy things. There should be devotees taking care of cows, not just one person taking care of cows. People should take responsibility. Families should have their own little cows so they can have milk. Now, this is the idea, and we should be plowing the field with bullocks instead of expensive tractors. That's the ideal. We should strive for that. And I don't know how we get from here to there, but you know, that's the ideal that we want to get to. I mean, what's the purpose of having a farm if you don't do simple living, high thinking? I mean, Prabhupada said that in New Vrindavan, it should be simple living, high. He laughed at them the first time they got a washing machine. They were carrying a washing machine up the hill to a farm that had no electricity. I mean, they were so attached to modern amenities. They were carrying this old type of washing machine with a hand wringer on it and everything like that. And Prabhupada was laughing and said, Ugra Karma. So Prabhupada's original vision for New Vrindavan was simple living, high thinking.
Prabhupada houses, two rooms and one bathroom.
Yeah. That was Prabhupada's original. Nowadays, actually, even in modern society, people are going for these micro houses. I don't know if you've read about it. It's something that's becoming more and more popular as people are becoming overwhelmed with economic necessities. They're buying these, they're constructing these little houses you can make for $15,000. Just little thing like 150 square feet, including the bathroom, bed, and a little kitchen. And people are living in, man and wife living in situations. You, anyone's heard of these micro houses before?
I have seen a lot of information, and some of them are so cute, so beautiful, so practical, and people are doing, it's a big moving about that, especially in places like San Francisco, where it's impossible, they say, to pay rent. It's a huge movement.
Into
those things right now.
Yeah, there's a huge movement to get out of this whole like economic whirlpool that modern society has put us into. I mean, we may not be aware of it, but I read about things like this. So I'm aware of it. So anyway, it's ultimately in a place like New Taliban. I mean, ultimately, not to criticize any, it's not that everybody should have a house with a swimming pool, you know, a 10,000 square foot house and 10 bedrooms, one for each day of the week or something like that. You know, we should live simply. I mean, when I first started the temple in North Carolina, I lived in a little cabin in the woods without running water or any of the amenities that you're used to. I would, and this is cold weather there. When I would take a bath outside in the morning, the water would freeze to my feet by the time it got down to the feet. In other words, I had to peel my feet off of the deck. So, I'm not saying you have to live like that. Here it's warmer. But ultimately, you know, Prabhupada did want something simple so we could live without an economic stress. It's not finding fault with anyone, but if you can live simply, when we first started our temple in North Carolina, we had zero money, practically speaking. I mean, a little bit. But practically speaking, so little, I bought the land without any money. And which is, I'm not going to tell you how I did it. But I bought land without any money, 16 acres. And then we were so poor, we had no money for boots. We had to put plastic bags on our shoes so we didn't get mud all over the place. And we had one, you know, we took showers outside. And I lived like that for 15 years in North Carolina. I mean, now I have a house because my mother paid for it. Thank God for my mother. But, so, one can live simply. I didn't die. I was actually healthier then than I am now because I was living very simply. Yeah.
When Mother Kunti and her husband, the Prabhupada disciple Mother Kunti, who is passed away now, moved to New Taliban, they moved here with the purpose of simple living, high thinking, and they bought a small amount of land, and they were fixing up what was a shed to live in. And the people, they bought the property from felt sorry for him and gave them a refrigerator and a washer and dryer. And she said, you can't, in America, you can't live simply because they won't let you.
That's true. I mean, that's, of course, I was living simply like that for 15 years. And that, but, you know, America's a little bit different, but you could live, someone could live in the woods here. I'm not saying you should do it. But if you want to have simple living, high thinking, I mean, Prabhupada talked about things like castor oil lamps, right? And living simply like that. I mean, what are you going to do if there's no electricity? I mean, the other day, electricity went off for a few hours and I was freaking out. Because I'm so attached to electricity using my computer. That's the main thing. I can do without other things. And water. So we're so attached to these things. I mean, I am too. Then when the electricity goes out, you don't know what you're going to do. Like I mentioned the other day that in New York they had this blackout many, many years ago. I think it was about 30 years ago or something, 40 years ago. And they had this blackout. Nobody knew what to do. So there was a baby boom right afterwards. Because they couldn't figure out what else to do. You know, and nowadays people don't even read anymore. Basically, isn't it? They sit with your computer. I mean, I went into someone's house a few days ago here, and they were playing this game in which they were killing innocent people on the computer. You know, killing men and women, shooting them. Not real people, you know, virtual people. And they didn't even look at me. I said hello, and they said hello without even looking at me. And so, you know, if I was to disconnect the computer, they'd probably take the gun out and shoot me. Pretty adult. Pretty close to an adult. I mean, people are so addicted to video games. I mean, you're a social worker, you know about that. People die playing video games. They just forget to eat and sleep. So we're so much addicted to the modern conveniences. And me too, you know. I have a cell phone, I have all these different things. I don't know what I'd do without it. So eventually, you know, if the economy changes or there's some disasters, we're going to have to learn to live simply. Because we can't go on consuming the resources of the earth at the rate we're consuming the resources of the earth. Just practically, it just can't go on. After a while, you know, global warming is happening. So many things are happening that, you know, things are going to change. And then, you know, you might find yourselves in a depression. And what are you going to do? You're going to have to learn to grow things on the land and just eat from what you can grow. You're not going to be able to get mangoes anymore. They're transported all the way from, you know, South America. Yeah.
What about high living and high thinking?
High living and high thinking.
Is that possible?
Yeah, if you're a pure devotee. Like, there are stories in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes of some devotees who were very wealthy and they were very Krishna conscious. It's very possible. All I'm saying is that the Prabhupada's vision for farm communities was a little bit different than what we have nowadays. That's the point I'm making. Not a little bit different. A hell of a lot different. Yeah.
When Srila Prabhupada was here in Calcutta giving a lecture, at the end of the lecture he was giving the blessings. And he emphasized also simple living, right thinking.
Yeah.
Grow your own food, he said it twice. Build small cottages. Grow your own cotton. So simply, I think Maharaj was for 15 years trying to do that. Would you be able to say if you're feeling better now, what you're doing now, or then those days, do you cherish more? Those days?
Well, I feel physically better now because I changed my diet. My diet is much more simple than it was then. You know, I was living in the woods very simply, but I was eating very high fat, high salt, fried. You know, you can't imagine what I was eating. I mean, I was a vegetarian. But the diet wasn't good. But I relished those days. It was very simple. It was much easier to sit down and read. What I discovered also is eventually I put electricity in the cabin. But what I discovered is when I turned off all the electricity from the circuit breaker, it was much more peaceful in the house. You can try that sometime at night when you're taking rest, if you don't need a fan or air conditioner. Turn it off at the circuit breaker and you'll actually feel the difference from not having being surrounded by electric fields. I mean, I could show you, I have a device not with me that detects electric fields, and I can take it into your house and show you how the whole house is surrounded by all these EMF, electric fields. You know, people worry about power lines, you know, big, tall power lines, but actually you're surrounded by these power lines in your house. Like if you go on the wall, you know, here, I'm surrounded by electricity right now. How that affects us, what it causes, what diseases it causes. I mean, in one sense, I was able to sleep a lot more peacefully without electricity. So, I mean, there's certain pros. But I'm not giving it up because it's necessary to preach. I mean, I need these things to preach Krishna consciousness. But we have to be ready. If Krishna takes these things away, if things happen in this world, we have to be ready to live without them and not freak out. I mean, you should learn which herbs, fruits, and things that grow naturally in the trees you can eat. And survival, yeah.
It may sound a little harsh, but sometimes I think that we have a misunderstanding of what really means simply.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel a little frustrated if I see, for example, readiness, if I see disorganization.
Well, that's not simple living. That's
so it's like, okay, because we are in a caravan, because we are in a fire, in the countryside, and we are so, or try to get into this mood of the simple living. So it's like sometimes people misunderstand that, because the simple living just neglects things.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Simple living doesn't mean messy living. You know, simple but clean. Like, you know, they probably talked about how the floor would have the cow dung on the floor. The people would, you see it in India, people live in huts and they sweep every day the cow dung off the floor. Not the cow dung, they sweep the dust with these little brooms, simple brooms made of straw. But if we want to get a broom, we go to Walmart, right? And we spend how much for a broom? $10 or something like that? $10-$20 for a broom. In India, they just gather some straw, tie it around. You know, tie it. You seen the Indian brooms? I'm sure anyone has been in India. And then they just get down on their knees and they sweep. And when they want to carry milk or water, they carry it in little pots on their head. And that way they have good posture. You know, people will have straight backs then. But someone like me who uses a computer all day long, my neck is crooked already. I'm getting bent because I'm living an unnatural life. You know, I'm worried. I look at myself and my neck is all bent, my head's all bent because maybe I should be carrying water pots on my head instead of using a computer. Yeah.
I think I really appreciate the old days that it was very strict, but we also did live very simple.
Yeah.
I think in Venezuela, remember, it was this amount of food and that was it. That was what we had. So then we collected money, came to the temple. It was very simple. And I really appreciate that.
It was wonderful, yeah.
It was good training. And now it's, everybody does what they want. Because anything we wanted to do, we had to come into the authority. What we wanted to do, what change we wanted to do. So, better training.
Yeah, it was. I think what you're saying is absolutely true. That it would be good to have like 2 years of training like that, right? And it was a very blissful time because we were in. I was also in Venezuela at that time, and it was. It was a very blissful time distributing those books for Prabhupada. I mean, I can't say it was bad. I would say that those are some of the most ecstatic days of my life. Those Christmas marathons, right? I mean, in one city, Caracas, Venezuela, we distributed 35,000 Bhagavad Gita's in 1 month. Hardbound Bhagavad Gita's. And Prabhupada was so pleased that he said, regarding Ramanujacharya, who was our number one distributor, he said, he has Krishna's mercy.
What is his name?
His name was Ramanujacharya. You remember him, right? And he was the number one. He distributed like 10,000 of those Gitas in 1 month. One devotee distributed 10,000 hardbound Bhagavad Gitas on the buses.
Because it was so easy to do it. We will go in the buses, and the buses will be full of people. And in one bus, we will able to do like the small ones. We will do the equivalent of $1, three for a dollar.
Yeah.
So we were doing like literally hundreds of books in one bus. It was the whole day, up and down, up and down, up and down in the buses.
It was fun, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, it was nectar. It was nectar. And like Lila said, it was tough. Some things were a little bit fanatical, but it was so good training.
Oh yeah.
For us, still, it gives us a very strong base. And when we came back from book distribution, it will be the Bhaktas and Bhaktin programs. The philosophy, remembering, memorizing verses, memorizing songs, and all those things, and the etiquette. We were very strict with the Vaishnava etiquette.
Yeah, it was very nice training. I mean, I think that everybody should go through that, but we don't want to give people the promise that they're going to be maintained the whole life. That's the difference. I mean, if you look at the Mormons, they have to do that for 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, they do that intense preaching for 2 or 3 years, and then after that, the society arranges them for them to have education, jobs, marriage, everything is taken care of. And they're a very fast-growing organization internationally. So, but those early days were great. I mean, I wouldn't trade them for anything. Venezuela was so ecstatic, wasn't it? I mean, after the marathon, the devotees would be carrying each other around the temple room. You know, I remember after the Christmas marathon, and we had this devotee, Pancha Javita, was there at that time.
Yes.
You remember that? And it was just exciting. We challenged Tamal Krishna Maharaj to a book distribution contest, and we won.
Mm-hmm.
In Tripurari Maharaj, and we won. We were calling them every other day, saying, how much have you done? And we defeated Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and I'm so happy about that.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of the most blissful times in my spiritual life. So, you know, I don't want to negate that or talk, because it was great.
What year was that?
75,
yeah.
Six.
Yeah, 75 or so, yeah. 75 or 76, yeah. And we went before Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was so pleased. We went to, maybe you don't know this story, Leela Avatar, but I went and brought Ramanujacharya and some of the other devotees to Prabhupada in Mayapur. And Prabhupada was looking at some pictures of temple construction. And Prabhupada was saying, very nice, very nice. But he wasn't super enthusiastic. And then I said to Prabhupada, this devotee, referring to Ramanujacharya, has distributed 10,000 of your book, Bhagavad Gita's, in 1 month. Prabhupada's eyes opened wide. And Prabhupada said, he has the mercy of Krishna. And I was getting envious. I was thinking, what about me? You know, I was the temple president. And Prabhupada looked at me and he said, well, you all have the mercy. Prabhupada knew what I was thinking. He said, you all have the mercy of Krishna. But, in one sense, the gopis are the highest. So Prabhupada was referring to the direct distributors as being, you know, an exalt.
That's why he came to Venezuela, right?
Yeah.
It was
the book distribution. You know, Prabhupada was very pleased. I mean, Venezuela was number one in book distribution in the whole world at that time. Number one in book distribution. It was a fantastic. I mean, those are some of the best days of my life. I mean, I made a lot of mistakes, which I apologize for, but it was fun. We had a lot of fun in Krishna consciousness there. So, I mean, I've had a lot of fun in my Krishna consciousness. I can't criticize anything. So any other questions? I think it's getting late. It's time for fun prasadam. Some austere prasadam. We're all going to graze with the cows. just eat grass this morning. There's a story of a lady who had terminal cancer and she ate grass and she got better. Anyone's heard of Ann Wigmore here? She started this place called the Hippocrates, place for curing diseases. And she was left to die outside by her parents. And she had so many diseases, cancer and everything like that. And she just took the grass. It was wheatgrass. Wheatgrass. And she started chewing on it. She didn't even have a wheatgrass juicer. She started chewing on it and she got completely better. And then she started her whole movement for curing people. Interesting, isn't it? So we can all join the cows today. Do you mind if we're all out there in the fields on our hands and knees? You know, the cows will like the association.
In the 36th anniversary of Maharaj taking sannyas.
Yeah.
And they're having a program in New Orleans. It begins at 5:30 this evening, and everyone is cordially invited.
Venezuela was the first place I put on saffron, so. That was it's a story I don't want to tell, but anyway.
when I was in
Guayaquil, what year was that? Prabhupada was still on the plot? No, that was after Prabhupada left. I was sannyasi, yeah. Sannyasi. I took sannyasi in 1978, right after Prabhupada left. So, anyway. And I took in Lima, Peru from Hiranandamarish.